I was the only boy in my family, so I just competed with my dad.
Yeah. All right, it's 5:06. We call the meeting to order. Can we do a roll call?
Commissioner Forrest?
Here.
Commissioner Hollingsworth? Commissioner McMillan?
Here.
Commissioner Mielke?
Here.
Commissioner Olson?
Here.
Vice Chair Hitt?
Here.
Chair Merritt?
All right, thank you. Call to the audience. We have one member. Any speaker cards? No? Okay. No speaker cards, so we'll move on to the next item here, special agenda. Review and approval of the February 15th, 2022 special session meeting minutes. Can I get a motion if there are any comments, discussion, or a motion?
I'll move approval of the minutes.
All right. Thank you.
I'll second that.
All right. Thank you. Motion and a second for approval. Roll call. Yes.
Commissioner Hollingsworth? Commissioner McMillan?
Yes.
Commissioner Wilkie?
Yes.
Commissioner Olson?
Yes.
Yes. All right, thank you. Moving on to the second item of the agenda, we have two new council members. So I'd like to welcome the two new council members, and if you could please introduce yourself just briefly for the rest of the commission.
I'm Pat Olson. I'd just like to give a little background.
Sure, if you want, or yeah, experience or interests.
Former employee of the Arizona Department of Water Resources, master's in geology. Worked for Water Resources as a supervisor in compliance, operation, and recharge for 8 years. And science teacher after that and realtor now. So I'm very happy to be here, pleased to be here.
All right, thank you, welcome.
Hi, Alan Forrest, and my background is I have a bachelor's, master's in civil engineering from University of Arizona. The master's is emphasis on water resources management. And I have some history with Oro Valley Water Utility. Was the director from about 2000 to 2005. I also spent quite a bit of time with Tucson Water and was a director of Tucson Water for a few years. I think it was like 2012 to 2015, something like that. And so, yeah, happy to be back. And I know a lot of the staff and worked with staff a lot. Got a great staff here. Really good people.
All right, thank you. Welcome. All right, and for the next couple items here, we'll actually take them out of order at the request of staff. So we're going to start with it'll be the third item in the agenda, but it's number 6 on your agenda, unless you have an updated agenda. I'm not sure, sorry. It's the update and discussion on the Independent Northwest Recharge Recovery and Delivery System.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Good evening, Commissioners. So tonight,
do you like the lights on or off?
That's nice. Right?
Commissioners, can you see the screen?
That right? Looks good.
That's good.
Okay, so tonight I'm going to speak to you a little bit about the Northwest Recharge Recovery and Delivery System and where we're at in terms of the independent portion. This isn't the partner portion yet. I think Peter's going to cover that later on this evening. But I'm just going to work right now on the independent portion and to kind of take you through where we're at, where we've been, and kind of where we're going to get to. So here's a little bit of history, some background. Currently, Oro Valley is wheeling 2,000 acre feet a year through Tucson Water at several locations in the town. In the main area, and then one location at our countryside remote site. In the future, as part of the Northwest Independent, we're going to be, our capacity entitlement is 4,000 acre feet. So we'll eventually, at some point, we'll get to 4,000 acre feet. I think initially we're going to be probably in 1,000 to maybe 2,000 at that with wheeling. And then, so this portion too, so you know, kind of explains to you a little bit about what we're looking at in terms of helping kind of reduce our dependence on groundwater, supplementing the Northwest water, to reduce that drawdown. And then eventually we'll get it to our La Cañada reservoir where we'll pump it into our F and G zones. So this is just kind of a little kind of a description of where we're at. So the independent portion is going to start at a four-bay booster here, a shared four-bay booster where the partnered portion ends. And then we're going to bring our water approximately 6 miles to a second four-bay where then we're going to pump it into our La Cañada reservoir up here on Moore Road and King Air. And so we'll have our two discharge lines. So this will be all Oro Valley in the red, and then the blue will be our discharge lines from our booster into our E-zone. And then we'll also have, you know, so in a later slide, our D-zone blending to help bring down our TPS. So as far as what we've done so far as it relates to the Northwest Project, we've done all our environmental, our cultural, archaeological. We did a determination of our alignment. We looked at several locations. We based this on trying to minimize our impact, not only on the desert, but also, when it comes to disruption of major roadways. So we identified that in our first phase of the project. We did the environmental. We secured our alignment. And then part of it at the same time as a partner booster, we did a design and a short discharge line from our booster site to Blue Bonnet, which is where Metro Water heads south and we head east. And we were trying to, the idea there was to use economies of scale, try to coordinate with our partners to a point where we would split off, and that was the location where it was determined would be the best place to split off at Blue Bonnet and the Lambert Lane alignment. So then the transmission main, we're currently about 90%. We expect to be at 100% here shortly. We provided our comments on our 90% plans, and we had some issues with constructability that we're looking at, and so those were some of the comments that we're going to get to and try to work those out. And I'm expecting probably within the next month to have 100% plan on those transmission, on that transmission main from Blue Bonnet all the way to our four bay, to the Oro Valley Independent Four Bay. So easements and state trust land, all that right away has been secured. We got a 50-year lease, a 50-foot wide easement going through from Thornydale to the Four Bay location, as well as Four Bay, the 2-acre parcel itself. So that's already been secured. We've signed that 50-year lease. And the E-zone discharge, that's about 95% complete as well. What we have pending is our request for qualifications. We're going to do for the independent four bay. We've actually advertised, I think, so this is a little old now. We put it out on the street and it should be there for a few more weeks. And then we're hoping to get some good responses back. We're currently working on our IDA for the construction of the partnered booster sites. So that would include Metro Water, Oro Valley, and Moran. And then, of course, our last portion is to bring in our blending line. So we're working on that as well, scoping that out for our consultant to design. That's approximately 3,000 feet coming up Shannon from a new subdivision that's going in just to the south and the west of Ironwood High School. So here's kind of another view of the alignment for the Northwest Project.
Hey, Lee, you may be getting to it. On the independent portion, will you talk about our agreement with state land and to get the booster site and the easement?
Well, as far as any sort of discussion, well, this is more the environmental, what we've done kind of as a plan. But yeah, so we other than just, we have secured that lease agreement, that 50-year lease agreement. Is that your?
Yeah. So, well, at least being real modest, we had budgeted quite a bit of funding to purchase easements property owners, but Lee was able to negotiate an agreement with state land to save us a lot of money. He got us the easement for the transmission main as well as the former property for the Fort Bay Reservoir Booster Station. So just worth mentioning.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good point. Yeah, it was a team effort.
Yeah, could you indicate where that is for the new commissioners that don't know anybody or previous slides for the area?
Okay. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to see, but here just, so here's Naranja, and here's the Shannon Road alignment going north-south. At this point here at Naranja and Shannon Road is where the pavement, you know, it just makes that that right turn, and it's just a curve. This is all dirt currently and desert. And it's going to be, there's a private parcel here. So we went just north of that private parcel. Maybe about a quarter mile north of Naranja, a little less.
And by going up Old Father, that saved us quite a bit of money as opposed to whatever Shannon, didn't it?
Right. So that was kind of what I mentioned before is, you know, when we looked at that first phase of the project, we looked at the alignment and we wanted to minimize our impact, you know, it's a very healthy desert. I mean, there's a lot of saguaros, a lot of ironwoods, we didn't want to have to, you know, mitigate all of that. So we tried to find a road and Old Father was, it's a dirt road, it's not paved. And there was sufficient amount of width there for us for constructability to go in and construct it within the existing right-of-way, county right-of-way. And then Camino del Norte there is pretty much all dirt road all the way until state land. And so the plan is to go within that road, which is probably about 50 feet wide.
And the other benefit is there's no planned improvements along that alignment.
No, we met with, that's a good point. This project's gone on so many years that, you know, one of the first things we did is we met with all the right-of-way folks. We met with all the transportation people in Marana, Pima County, because those are the jurisdictions that we're in. We met with Oro Valley, and we asked them, you know, hey, this is what we're thinking. Do you have a preference? You know, sure, there's other utilities in the ground now, but... They said, yeah, you know, this would be fine. And so we coordinated with them on our alignment, and they were okay with it. And so
we didn't want to get into a situation where we put our water line in and 5 years later they decided to do an improvement. They have to move everything.
Right.
So this alignment doesn't look like in our lifetime will ever be slated for significant improvement.
Right, yeah, according to you know, the folks at the county and Marana. What Miranda told us is that they have no intention of widening the road to bring people to Oro Valley. And so the county, you know, they were fine with the existing roads that we were using there, and there's some utilities. Tucson Water has some service areas up here. There's some Southwest Gas communications underground. But we're, you know, we've potholed all of that, and so we're going to be sufficiently, we're going to have sufficient separation from all those other utilities, which is going to be nice. There will be some, on the Lambert Lane alignment before it gets to Thornydale, there's going to be some, but it's going to be mostly on the shoulder, but within right of way, there might be some pavement replacement in some areas and some mitigation that we've already identified as part of our environmental things. And this is just kind of a plan from the environmental assessment that was done. So this is our independent booster design. It's hard to see without zooming in, but so the partner's booster site is here, and the plan set that we're doing is coming out from the booster to Blue Bonnet here. It crosses Twin Peaks, and that was another thing that we were able to do working with Miranda's transportation. Initially, we thought we may have to jack and bore underneath Twin Peaks, but in talking with them, they agreed to allow us to open cut that. So and pay and replace.
That's a big deal.
That's a huge savings.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right. Right. That's a huge savings. So working with Metro Water and Ore Valley, they agreed to that. And so we're going to come across together, across Twin Peaks. And this is the transmission. So this is our transmission main where it picks up from Bluebonnet all the way to our intermediate core bay at Shannon and Naranja. So it's about a 5 mile stretch to there and then another mile when we do our discharge lines into our E zone, not including our D zone blending. So yeah, there's the state trust land, 50 year lease, secured four bays and the environmental cultural. All that's complete.
What's the reference to the re-equipping the well? Well, are we talking about?
I think you cut a typo.
Yeah, that shouldn't be.
That shouldn't be there, yeah.
So if you're just talking about the booster, we'll need a new pump and
motor. No, that's going to be all new construction.
You can delete the whole diamond.
Oh, yeah, you can delete that whole.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a mistake on my part. Sorry about that. So there's no re-equipment, there's no well. This is probably from a previous slide that I had. It is. We're going to take that.
Probably think about D9.
I think probably about D9. Every year we do those rehabs. So this here, and so for the, I put this picture in here because recently we had an emergency situation where we had, I think the commission's aware of this, where we had to rehab or replace completely, well, we had an option, right? An option to replace or repair an existing reservoir. When we looked at the cost to do the two, it seemed like it was almost as much to do a complete replacement as it was to do a repair. So we ended up going with a kind of a design build. Our contractor came in, they demoed it, they rebuilt it, all within just shortly over a year's period. And the design and build, so they were able to secure materials and purchase things in advance once the design was finalized. And so we're looking at doing something similar to that in our phase three, which is our intermediate four bay booster. It was a huge savings. So we're looking at that option with this current RFQ that we're going out with. So yeah, April 2022, we actually advertised it this month. So March, it's been advertised. We're hoping to get the responses in probably mid-April and anticipate having this constructed. Our goal is to have it constructed. And the initial schedule was having it constructed in the first quarter of 2024, but everything's kind of slid a little bit, including the partners portion of the project. So we're looking at maybe the second to third quarter of 2024 to have it all done. And then our phase four is our D zone blending. This is the line that's going to come in from, there's a subdivision coming in now, Shannon 80, it's called Shannon 80 out here, kind of just a little ways north of Midway between Naranja and Lambert Lane. Here's the high school here, and it's going to be coming in here, and we're going to connect and blend our D-zone water. Our D-zone water is probably our lowest as it relates to total dissolved solids, TDSs. And that'll help us blend in with our Colorado River water, or CAP water coming in from the north. And then here, the last portion of it is where it gets delivered into our La Cañada Reservoir. So we've already constructed our F-zone discharge line. Our G-zone line was constructed as a shared agreement with a developer. We extended it and upsized it as part of that subdivision construction. And that is 100% designed, those discharge lines are constructed, with the exception of the actual booster and the electrical and SCADA controls is we're out to design this year.
So the blending will take place before the final boost.
Correct.
Yeah,
it'll take
so it you get some good mixing and
the goal is, and right now we're doing a study, and we've done that study. We haven't finalized it, but it's part of the second phase, looking at that water quality and blending it and our ratios to blend, and then also looking at the pipes, you know, the reactions and the flow directions looking, coming up with flow, you know, directional and bidirectional flushing plans to make sure that, you know, there's no negative impact, you know, for aesthetics, things like that, from the water. The good news is that we're already getting that water in that E zone where we're going to be putting it. So,
yeah.
Good question. And I think that's it. Thank you.
So, as I understand it now, Oro Valley Water Utility is going to be the project manager for both the partnered and the independent portion.
So we're going to be managing our independent portion,
right,
along with the partnered portion just at the booster site. So we're the four bay. So the partners are going to end at the four bay, the reservoir, and then we're going to pick it up and we're going to manage it from the suction side of those at that booster, all the way for the partnered portion, and that's where we have that IDA to Blue Bonnet. That's going to be managed by Oro Valley.
And both those projects are going to be constructed at the same time?
Yes, the goal there is to construct them at the same time. What we were trying to avoid there was having multiple contractors and multiple agencies working in one site together, and then, you know, and pointing the finger, hey, I'm waiting on him, you know.
Yep.
You know, they're delaying me. And so the idea here is that we have, you know, in economies of scale as well, and hopefully we can, you know, get all that under one contract, mm-hmm, in one contract.
So we, from that point, Blue Bonnet, if I remember correctly, it's running down Lambert to Old Father. Is Metro taking that same alignment for their discharge line, or are they going somewhere different?
That's a good question. So at Blue Bonnet and the Lambert Lane alignment there where it intersects, Metro Water is headed south on Blue Bonnet,
okay,
and then eventually get to their Herb Johnson reservoir, which goes a little bit further south of, Portero.
Yeah, I was just asking because obviously if you're both running down the same alignment, right, working together might make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and then crossing Twin Peaks, and yeah, we'll be working together, coordinating all that, right, under Oro Valley supervision.
Okay.
And of course, all their inspectors and their folks will be involved with it as well.
This chart does not show the connection up to the Kingina Reservoir.
Up to which reservoir?
The North Lackawanna Reservoir.
Yeah, the that's right. So that's a good point. So here, the reason it doesn't is because we're using existing infrastructure. So one of the things that, you know, Peter, you know, when we were having this initial discussion several years ago, you know, we have one of our engineers, Mark Moore, you know, he's like, you know, why? Because initially we were going to build an independent line another 3 miles going from our four bay up to Moore Road, across Moore Road to King Air and into Lackawanna. It was going to be its own independent line. But as we started looking at the hydraulics internally, you know, he said, hey, well, why don't we just use existing infrastructure? And that was a kind of aha moment where he was like, oh, you know, why not? Let's look at it. You know, and that's going to save a ton of money there.
And then we modeled it. And the reason it worked out so well is because of the location we have for our intermediate four bay reservoir. We can take care of any water quality issues there, any kind of treatment we have to do there before we get it into the E zone or that part of the system. And yeah, that was aha moment. That was a big savings for us,
right,
which hopefully all get eaten up with escalating construction costs.
So that'll be your point of entry into the system then, at that
point. Yeah, directly.
Yeah, right, those blue lines are the point of entry.
And back to what you said earlier about blending that D zone, that was part of the reason too, is that we figured, you know, let's blend it here so before it gets into the distribution side, we'll disinfect through all that. But that's going to be a huge savings there, especially now with the cost of materials. And not only that, but going north, there was a lot of really healthy desert that, you know, we would have had to, you know, done a lot of mitigation. And so this kind of helped us get away from that.
So, given the fact that materials and other costs are changing,
mm-hmm,
I know you can't tie down a cost too tightly at this point, but how does the budget look with these things balancing against the other changes you're aware of?
Well, you know, so right now the partners, and Peter will probably speak to this a little bit later on, so the partners have the partner portion is out to bid right now.
Right.
We've got an engineer's estimate. Nobody's looking forward to seeing what the contractors are going to come back with.
Yeah.
But, you know, just in what we're seeing, I mean, we've seen anywhere from, you know, not only the cost of materials, but the delays and the lead time of getting the materials.
Those are costs, too.
Right, those are costs as well. And that's why you see that schedule kind of pushed back to the third quarter of 2024. It's kind of anticipating some of that lead time. Maybe it won't. Maybe it'll get better. You know, we still have a little ways to go, but we probably have a bit. What?
Well, and then now that we're into bidding and construction, we'll very likely be providing the monthly updates to the commission because things are going to start happening, and especially when it comes to the budget where we stand and contingency plans to pricing coming in to a point where, you know, it's maybe even unaffordable to the partners in some way. I mean, we just have to see where the bids come.
Yeah. Well, my boy, in the course of the Oral Valley portion, you've identified a number of cost savings against the initial plan. And my fear would be, of course, that'll be eaten up rises in other areas.
I've already anticipated that.
Yeah.
It is typical of my life story. You know, I win over here, then I lose over here, and at the end I'm at the same place. You know,
isn't bad.
I'm so used to it now. You know, when anything goes like right, I go to church and light a candle. So it's a little thankful. Well, stay tuned. We're going to be providing updates on that. For sure.
And do you have a schedule tracking in place for this? As things progress, can we see the charts of that?
Right now it takes up a wall in our office, but we can...
Well, I think you can condense that down, so...
It's unfriendly at this scale. I mean, yeah. The one in our office is...
Four by five.
We can come up with something.
Foot section of wall. Sure, yeah, that would be fun. Yeah, we can definitely provide that schedule. You know, kind of going back to what you said, though, too, is... And the partners have already started. We cut back. We had two reservoirs at the booster at the partnered booster site. We reduced that down to one. We're eliminating one well. So, you know, we're trying to figure out ways to save. You know, where we can save.
You're still going to make the same capacity.
Like, I can touch on that.
Yeah. I'm getting into Peter's territory.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? No? All right, moving on to the next item. Formerly item 5 on the agenda, now number 4, update and discussion on the Partner Northwest Recharge Recovery and Delivery System. Peter.
Thank you very much, Acting Chair Hitt. So, like I said, this project, NWRD has two components. There's a partner component and an independent component. I'll go over the things Lee already touched on relatively quickly, and I might add some clarifications to some of the things we went over pretty quickly that I think are important to emphasize. So the foundation of the NWRDS project in 2017, the governing bodies of Metro Water, Brown, and Oral Valley, unanimously approved this NWRDS, the Northwest Recharge Recovery Delivery System, IGA. It's a 50-year IGA. The town has, and Marana have a capacity entitlement, so and Metro, Oral Valley, Metro Water have a capacity entitlement of 4,000 acre feet a year. Marana has a capacity entitlement of 2,400 acre feet a year. What percentage of your share of the partner portion costs is dependent on your contractual capacity? So for example, Oral Valley and Metro, we share the same cost for the partner portion. Marana a little less because they have less contractual capacity. The IGA details the partnership design construction O&M of the NWRDS system. The NWRDS IGA establishes an NWRDS committee to render decisions on the design, construction, operations, deliveries. The authorized committee representatives are Metro's town manager, Marana's water department director, and Oral Valley's water department director. The NWRDS committee, we established a technical committee, whereas the authorized committee members were more high level, you know, IGAs, interpretations of the IGAs as we go through living with the document, budgets, whereas the technical committee is really getting down in the weeds, supervisory control of data acquisition systems, pumps, motors, pipelines, materials, sizes, that sort of thing. And each partner typically has their instrumentation and control and engineering staff present for participating in the technical committee. As I said there, the authorized technical committee members are, so O&M and engineering staff. I know Lee touched on it. I'm going to go over just again really quickly. So the partner portion is in green, and the independent portion is this red and blue. So right here, Metro, Oral Valley, and Marana, we have CAP deliveries either to Lower Santa Cruz or Outer Valley Recharge Basin. So we deliver water and store water, Oral Valley does, at Lower Santa Cruz. And the way the rules work is if you're within 1 mile of where you recharge CAP water, you can recover that water. You're not pumping groundwater. You're recovering the CAP water you recharge and or stored there. So we have, and I just don't show it on here for clarity, but we've drilled 3 recovery wells within that 1 mile safe harbor of those recharge facilities. The partnered portion is, you know, drill the well, equip the wells, and construct a CAP recovered water transmission pipeline. We go across state land, the private land, and we cross the railroad, I-10, Cal-Portland's 24/7 conveyor belt operation where they mine from one of Twin Peaks. So there's a lot of crossings there. And here we go to this partnered Four Bay Reservoir. So that's the partnered reservoir. And from there, that's the delineation from partner to independent. It's at the booster stations. We have 3 booster stations of similar design, but that's where the partnership ends and it goes independent. Each partner's booster station, you know, they're pumping to their own service area, so there's different head requirements, different horsepower requirements, that sort of thing. But they're pretty much, they pretty much look about the same. From there, this is the independent portion. Like Lee had mentioned, right here, here's Twin Peaks Road. So Marana, they come out here and they go up north based at Twin Peaks Road. Metro and Oral Valley, we need to cross Twin Peaks Road. And then Metro breaks off at Blue Bonnet and heads south. We continue east, Old Guadalupe Camino del Norte, to another reservoir right here. So the way the water system works is it's too high of an elevation to pump from here, basically to here into our system. I mean, we'd end up with like, you know, 360 PSI here. And it's not an efficient way to run the system. It's not an efficient way for us to manage water quality, because here this is a partnered reservoir. Each partner might have a different standard for their community's tolerance for water hardness, total dissolved solids, maybe future emerging contaminants, those sorts of things. So we didn't want to be, we didn't want to be dependent on someone else's tolerance for certain water quality standards. So other than the fact that it technically makes sense that we need another reservoir here before we pump into our system, it also answered a lot of questions as to, you know, what our community's needs are and expectations are for water quality with respect to hardness and anything having to do with contaminants and that sort of thing. And it also lets it's a good place for us to blend. One of the things we're trying to maintain is the community's kind of gotten used to the harder water that we're delivering now. We really don't want to exceed the water quality, the aesthetic qualities with respect to TDS and hardness we have now. And we expect that in the future, as we keep pumping here, we are expecting the water to get a little harder, the total dissolved solids to go a little higher. And we want to be able to control that here at this reservoir through blending. And that's where we bring our groundwater to this reservoir blending. That's strictly for aesthetic purposes. If we ever run into future issues with emerging contaminants here, you know, we want to be able to have treatment options here. And we're already designing for the space to have those treatment options. And then from there, as Lee had mentioned, we pump into our service area. And what we're basically doing, this is our E-zone, we're pumping into here, and it'll end up making its way to King Air. Here, we're constructing a booster station, and from there, it pumps up into the growth areas of our system. This project is 60% paid for by impact fees, 40, which is growth-related customers, future customers, and 40% paid for by existing customers through their groundwater preservation fee. So the water, it'll move up into the growth part of our systems, but also we're going to be able to drop it down into lower parts of our system. Beyond the scope of this presentation, but worth mentioning, even though we're going to have the capacity of bringing this additional water into our service area, we'll still have dealing through Tucson Water, at least in most of our wheeling locations, because they reach areas of our service area that we just can't get this water to. If you get further east here, there's certain limitations with moving this water through the system. So essentially, we're going to be wheeling water through Tucson Water from the south and the east up north into our system. I got the weather now. Fronts coming in here, but then NWRDS is basically going to come in from the west side, move north, drop down south. So we're going to have CAP wheeling through Tucson Water, as well as NWRDS deliveries through this system here. And also, I think we want to maintain our wheeling agreements with Tucson Water. While our system is very good at moving that wheeled water through our system, this is just another way of getting these additional resources into our system. So I do like having the redundancy of both wheeling and NWRDS deliveries. So that's kind of the system overview. So partner project update. So the recovery well design, permitting, and construction, that's all completed. Well equipping, power line extension, easements right away, 50% complete. But we're complete with easements and the right-of-way work. We're currently working with Trico Electric Power to get power to the sites, and we're out to contract, out to bid right now for well equipping. Transmission, so that covers the recovery well. Transmission pipeline design and permitting, that's from here to the partner reservoir. That design and permitting, that's 100% complete. Transmission pipeline easements, railroad I-10, the cement plant, all those easements, that work is 100% complete. So transmission pipeline construction, I just put 1% complete because we're out to bid right now. With respect to the Four Bay Reservoir design and permitting, that works 100% complete. And here again, I say the Four Bay Reservoir construction 1% complete because we're out to bid right now.
What's the date for the bid submissions?
Two more weeks. We had a pre-con. Okay. We had the pre-con last week. Did you go to the pre-construction meeting? Did you go?
Yeah, there? No, they did.
Okay.
Yeah.
We had a pre-construction meeting last week. I think bids are due in 2 more weeks.
Okay, so it's really close.
Yeah. And you know, as I mentioned, I know I've been trying to provide updates on this project maybe every 3 or 4 months. We'll probably be moving to monthly, just I want to keep the commission informed of where things are coming, especially with respect to cost of things.
Yes. Yeah, Peter, just curious. So on these bids you have out, or is that conventional?
Design bid build?
Yes. Yeah.
And
it probably makes sense right now with the way things are moving around, get it locked in.
Yeah, and one of the things we've done is, so originally, just on that note, it was a 12-month construction period. And, you know, we we do a lot of work. All of the partners do work with the contracting community. We know all the players, or the players we're expecting. And we reach out to them, and we talk and say, hey, or they even call us, hey, because everybody knows about this project.
Right.
And we talk and we're like, hey, this is doable in 12 months. Well, in the old days it was, but now there's serious concern with acquiring materials and locking the price, the supply chain issue, blah, blah, blah. So what we did is we made it an 18-month contract period, but I have the concern of, because I've had the experience before, is you just give a contractor 18 months, you don't want them going out there when they're slow somewhere else and filling it around. So the way that the contract's written is you have that 6 months to get your materials. And once the materials, we'll pay them for them. We have possession of them on site and those sorts of things. But it's an 18-month construction period. The contracting community seemed to be receptive of that answer. And also we hope that leads to better pricing for us. As you know, if you get too aggressive on the time period, the price goes way up.
Yeah.
So stay tuned on that. We do, as Lean kind of touched on, we do have contingency plans in place, and then part of our bid packages for, if the pricing comes in too high. Like, for example, originally at the partnered reservoir, we had two reservoirs there. Once we really looked at, they're four big reservoirs. The real purpose of those reservoirs is to provide a constant suction supply for the booster pumps. So much water is going to be going through there, you're not going to get like 3 days of capacity there. So we're like, we could save quite a bit of money if we just built one reservoir. And another thing, we still have the space for in the future, if we ever needed two reservoirs, we could build two reservoirs. The instrumentation and control, everything will be set up for those kinds of expansions. Another thing, even though we have the contractual capacity for 4,000 acre feet a year, when this is done, we're not going to go, 2,500 GPM 24/7, which is about 2,500 gallons per minute 24/7, is about 4,000 acre feet a year. We're going to start slowly on this system. These water systems, they're like living, breathing, organic systems. You shock it real hard, bad things can happen. So one of the things is, one of the contingency plans is, maybe we don't equip three wells, maybe we just re-equip two recovery wells. So we just need to see where the pricing comes in. We've had the brightest and the best consultant engineers try to give us the best estimates that they could, but until you get the guy that's going to build the thing, you really don't know. So stay tuned on that. Okay, so here's, Lee touched on this a little bit. So going back, so while the partner's work ends at the reservoir, and I know it's hard to see, and I apologize, so here's the reservoir here. And what you have is you have three little designated areas for a booster station here, there'd be one here, and there'd be one here. We just show ours because it's our plant set, but here's Metro's discharge line, here's Miranda's discharge line. And when we did the IGA, when we were working on this 7-8 years ago, if I can believe that, the partners were not necessarily looking at being there at the same time. But as we moved along and the communities grew and just things changed, the partners realized we want to build our booster stations at the same time. We don't want to be paying for an asset that we're not using now. So we're like, there's a potential to have three different contractors in a small space. And that doesn't work for us. So as this commission is privy to, I came up with what we're calling as a supplemental IGA, which basically the governing bodies, Metro, Water, Town, Round, Oral Valley, we approved the supplemental IGA. The goal was simplify construction coordination, allow the partners to have beneficial occupancy of the infrastructure at the same time, and hopefully take advantage of economies of scale. One of the things that when we first started discussing expanding the existing IG, Metro Water as a lead agency on the partner portion said, their general manager, he told me, Pete, this job is taking a managing this job has taken a tremendous amount of, I don't have the staff to do it. You know what, being a good partner said, you know what, I'll write the IGA, Oral Valley be the lead agency. Everybody liked that idea. So we did it, I call it, it's not, the official term isn't a supplemental RNWRGS, because IGA stands on its own, but it's just easier for me to communicate it that way. It's project managed by Oral Valley. It's inspected and accepted on behalf of the partners of Oral Valley. And the partners reimburse Oral Valley for all costs associated with work related to the work that we're doing on behalf of the partners. And just to make sure the commission understands, I had a vacant engineering position that I had purposely been holding vacant for a couple of years. Didn't know, as I was assessing the needs of the department, and this was the perfect opportunity for us. So what we did is we hired a project manager. He's recently retired from Tucson Water. He's very knowledgeable, very well respected in the water profession here in Southern Arizona. We've all worked with him for over two decades, very capable person. We were able to hire him, and he's going to be the designated project manager working for Oral Valley, but doing work on behalf of the partners. His name is Mike Sanders. You might know him, Alan?
A little bit. Yeah. That was a good acquisition, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Mike's stellar.
Yeah. I was kind of funny how the world works, but Mike Sanders was my supervisor with Tucson Water for about 10 years, so kind of funny how that works. So, but we had a great working relationship, and I expect that to continue. So thanks for that endorsement, Alan. So looking, at the partner project update, so looking at, the yellow represents money we spent, the green is where we're at now, and then we have the orange in future. So if you compare this budget table compared to previous ones I presented, I kind of group things together. I'm trying to, as I work with this table, I'm trying to simplify it, be descriptive. So it looks a little different if you go back and compare it to like last year, the year before. Some of the names have changed just because like we're completed with a task. No need to have 20 tasks that are completed. I just lump them together. But just kind of showing where we're at. We're making good progress. We're mostly beyond the, with respect to the partner portion, I think we're like completely beyond the design and permitting phase, and now we're in the bidding and construction phase. With respect to the independent portion, we're done with all the design work except for our four-bay reservoir booster station, which we kind of touched on, is we're pursuing a design build on that, and that's just mostly to hopefully save us some time. Instead of doing a traditional design bid build, it's another delivery system. With working with contractors, where typically a contractor and a designer team up together to do what we call a design build, where they design it and they're also the one that builds it. I don't think the town's ever done a design build delivery method, at least for water. I don't know about public works. But we think it'll save us some time and hopefully save us some money. So here again, we're going to be paying attention to these numbers. Now, these are the total numbers, so bear in mind when you see $6.3 million, divide or multiply that times 0.6, that's impact fee funded, and the remaining 40% is funded by GPF. Just for the commission's knowledge, our impact fee account is very healthy. Do we have about 20 million in that? 18 million? And how much do we, in a 250 new meter sales a year, how much does it go up there? Is there a couple million?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much, yeah. So we're pretty sure we have the project, where the pricing comes in, will be totally funded with impact fees. We do not have enough GPF or groundwater preservation fees to pay for the existing customers portion that we were expecting to, that we'll have to bond for that. You know, here again, juggling, depending where the pricing comes in, because one of the things available to the partners, if the pricing comes in high, we can do some descaling. You know, maybe we can extend the construction period, but then you can get into the thing of borrowing money. If we have to borrow money, we'd like to borrow as soon as possible. Well, the interest rate is still low, but then there's certain things about bonding. You have to spend, is it 80% of what you bond within 3 years? You know, so once you bond the money, you get it all at once, but now you've got 3 years to get on it. So we're trying to balance how much are we going to need, and can we be able to spend it in time.
And the GPF will cover the debt coverage on those bonds?
In the future.
Right.
Yeah, and I think...
ongoing, but we don't... That isn't assuming you have to go out and find new money.
When we did our budget presentation, when you looked at the GPF, I think you saw it dips down, you know, and then it jumps up when we do bond, and then we start bleeding it off again. So any discussion on whether it's the partner or independent or the system as a whole. So we expect to be being updated on this more. In the near future, I'll be prepared to talk about what kind of water quality we can expect from here, any challenges there, and how we plan to address those challenges. But until then, any questions with what I've discussed? Did you our new commissioners, do you understand the system as I've explained it?
After the bids are received, how long, what kind of time period do you expect before award?
You know, it's typically within 30 days. You know, there's some, first of all, hopefully it comes, well, first of all, and you can do it quicker, but the thing is with the partners, the committee will convene, we'll look at the bids, assess, you know, responsiveness, you know, if there are any financial considerations, so. But I would expect within 30 days.
So we should see a substantial settling of the information on the costs.
As far as the partner portion, yes.
Certainly by the time we next look through water rates and our budgets.
Oh, for sure. Well, I would expect to have an update. You know, in April, I have a field trip plan, which we're going to talk about later, but I would expect to come back to you with some information in May.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Okay, great. Well, thank you for your attention. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Moving on to, let's see, formerly item number 3 on the agenda, now number 5. Peter again with the update discussion of possible action on the water utility annual report.
Thank you. So, let's see, about a month ago we provided a draft to the commission with respect to our annual report. Now, this, to our new commissioners, this annual report is something that's required by town code that every year the utility, with a recommendation of the commission, renders a report to council. So, you know, this is something, you know, staff puts together, the commission reviews it, provides comments, and, you know, thank you for the comments we received. I think without exception, I incorporated every comment. That's my ability. Commissioner Milky, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No comment.
Okay. So this.
I'm just itchy.
Okay. You know, if there's any other additional comments, you know, I think the report really gets better every year. So thank you for the review and the comments. But with that, after we have any discussion, I would be asking the commission to pass a motion to approve rendering the report to council. But any discussion on the annual report has been provided?
All right, no discussion. Anyone want to offer a motion?
And this is to render the report to council.
I'll so move.
All right, second?
I'll second.
All right. Roll call.
Commissioner Forrest?
Yes.
Commissioner McMillan?
Yes.
Commissioner Mielke?
Yes.
Commissioner Olson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hitt?
Yes. All right. Thank you. And then Peter, once again, formerly item number four, but now number item number six on the agenda, update and discussion on well pump and well field condition.
Thank you. So for our new commissioners, just so you don't think it's always like the Peter Abraham show, you do have finance staff, O&M staff, water quality staff, conservation staff, and a guest speaker throughout the year, so just bear with me tonight. I had to leave them. So this was part of the annual report. This is something we do every year. I renamed it. It used to be called the aquifer assessment, but I didn't think that was really a true name. It adequately described what we were assessing. We're really assessing our well field condition. If I look at the aquifer, and this is something that we'll be talking, I think, is a future agenda item we start talking about, the aquifer as a whole. There's a lot of inputs that go into assessing aquifer. So kind of really focusing on our well field condition. So the data, we have 16 accurate production wells in our main well field, and then we have our countryside service area where we have two production wells. We have 10 monitoring wells. Really the best production zone in our region here, we have the Catalina Mountains here, the Tortolita Mountains here, and as you know, the groundwater resides in the alluvial deposits. You're not going to get a lot of groundwater in the Tortolitas or the Catalinas, but all these standing gravels here are just perfect for holding, that's where the aquifer is, holding groundwater. And the real production areas that are suitable for a municipal type production is around our Big Wash and around the CEO here, so kind of in this vein right here. As you get away from that, production tends to drop off. As this alluvial gets thinner and thinner as you get to the impervious mountain ranges, there's not a lot of production to be had there. So that's just kind of just an overview of really where the production takes place. Every year we collect data to assess the well and pump condition. So one thing we look at is the pumping capacity of the well, the annual volume pumped, static water level, pumping water level, discharge pressure, and we do calculations. We do comparisons every year, pumping capacity, annual volume pump, static water level, pumping water level, all those things. And we look at drawdown. Drawdown is the difference between the pump not running, just what is the level of the aquifer, and then you turn the pump on, it creates this cone of depression and it draws down to a lower pumping water level, and that difference is called your drawdown. A real important number for us, we call it specific capacity, and what it is we look at, say you pump, you have a 1,000 GPM pump, when you turn it on, if it goes down 100 feet, say the drawdown is 100 feet, your specific capacity would be 10 gallons per foot of drawdown. So every year we look at, I think I just picked one well here, I picked CS1. We look at, the year, what was the pumping capacity, volume pump, static water, these sorts of things. And what that does is, with looking at the data and understanding the data, you can assess how your pump is doing, how your well is doing, three things, how your pump's doing, how your well is doing, to get a sense of how the aquifer is doing, at least localized to where you have that, your pumping unit there. Typically what happens, all things being equal, every year or every couple of years, you'll start to see lost production. That's just due to normal wear and tear of your pumping unit. You have a cast iron bowl, a bronze impeller. They wear out as you're pumping the water. There's fines in the water, like silts and fine sedimentations. And you'll have wear of your impellers, and you'll tend to lose efficiency and boost production capacity. And then also you look at your static water level to get a sense of, you know, what kind of drawdown or what kind of, how much are you over pumping that part of the aquifer? You know, are you seeing drawdowns? Are you seeing recovery? You get a sense of, and we do this now. We started 5 years ago a well rehabilitation program where we look at all these things, and if we see, God, you know, this well, we're drawing this thing. I'm going to overexpress to make a point. We're drawing this thing down 10 feet a year. Too much. You know, maybe we need to lighten up on it. So maybe instead of having a 1,000 GPM pump, we'll re-equip it with a 600 GPM pump. And typically, I would recommend doing something like that in lieu of cycling a larger capacity pump all the time. Because like most mechanical things, once you start it, you kind of want to keep it running instead of a large bunch of cycle times. So I would recommend, you know, let's put a smaller capacity pump and just run it longer. Then we look at, you know, pumping water level. What that tells me is, say my static water level is holding steady, and say my pumping capacity is dropping a little bit, but I see my drawdown is really getting more and more and more. That can be indicative of my well streams getting plugged up, and I'm losing well efficiency. So looking at this data tells us a lot of things. It tells us how's the pump doing, how's the well doing, and getting a sense of how the aquifer is doing, at least within the area of this pumping unit. So we look at all these things, we make assessments, and by making assessments, we say, you know, we can prioritize. We'll say, hey, you know, it's time to, this well needs to be rehabilitated, or we need to put a smaller pump in here, we're pumping the aquifer too hard here, or, you know, the well casing is getting plugged up, it's time to rehabilitate the well, brush and veil, let's clean it up. David, am I missing anything that you can think of when I talk about the data we look at and what we get out of it and how it helps us operationally?
Nope, you pretty much got it covered. Again, not cycling a higher capacity motor, keeping a lower capacity when it's on running, also is more efficient for our energy savings. And we look at that too.
And just here, David Allred, he's the Waddington's operations manager. He's been with us for 18 months. He comes from Avondale. David's been a great asset to the utility. He came up through the ranks in his water profession, starting from like literally digging ditches. Tonight, I mean, he's got all the grades I think you can get. Writes well, very intelligent. We were lucky to get him. You may remember George Kendrick retired a couple of years ago, and David's really growing. Alan, you'll appreciate talking to David and comparing now versus then. You might be shocked at the difference. So we're happy to have you, David.
Thank you.
Here's a nice graphical representation. Maybe, you know, looking at all the numbers, I know there's folks probably like Commissioner Wilkie, Commissioner Olson, and, maybe all of you, but like your numbers. I like numbers, but I'll tell you what, picture's worth 1,000 words. So you take all those numbers and you graph them. So this is like for one well here, CS1. Here I'm looking at the year versus like discharge pressure, pumping water level, static water level, and pumping capacity. So here's, for example, on this one here, you look at this and you're like, wow, your pumping water level is going down, your discharge pressure is going down, and then all of a sudden your capacity is going down, and all of a sudden it bumps up. Well, we did a well rehabilitation here. You know, this is pretty typical. You start a facility, and you see this steady decline over the years. Another thing, and I haven't shown it here, is we look at like a wire-to-water efficiency, particularly like a brand new site. You know, new pump, new motor, premium efficiency, everything. For every kilowatt hour you put into it, you'll get 0.72 kilowatt hours worth of production out of it. So say 72%. You know, once you get down to the 50% wire to water efficiency, it's time to rehabilitate. You're not operating efficiently. And my experience has been once you get to about 50%, typically in the summertime, someone's going to quit on you. So, but here, the CS1, I think it was 21, I think it was last year, had a time goes by so quick. 2023, we're going to hammer. You pull the pump, rehabilitated the well, the brush, bale, clean it, video it. If there's any patching that needs to be done in the well casing, patch it, and put a new pump, rewind the motor, and boom, you get everything back. You get your capacity back. You get your efficiency back. So, look at all the numbers we put in graph form, and it helps helps tell a story for us. So, well field condition here again, we look at pumping capacity, annual volume, pump static, water level. I'm not really sure I'm really happy with how this data presents. I'm still a work in progress on that. One of the comments I had received was, we used to just compare last year to this year, but maybe it didn't tell the whole story. So what I did is, to not have this table be huge, I looked at this year, which is 2021, because we take our readings in January of 2022, but it's for 2021 data. I looked at this year, last year, then I went every 5 years, 2015, 10, 5, 2000. One thing I was trying to show, just to keep it easy, was we weren't bringing in CAP water until 2000. When did we start? Holy Moses, the time's going by so fast now. When did we start wheeling?
14, then.
Was it? Okay.
And even 15 there is probably the first year of the show.
So what I'm trying to show here is when we're solely dependent on groundwater, and not every well is going to be reflective of this, but let me just, here that's just like a C4, from 2000, we had 9 feet of decline. So in 1 year of pumping, the aquifer dropped 9 feet. In 2005, that year it dropped 17 feet. But then we started bringing in additional sources of supply, laying off our groundwater pumping, and we saw a great reduction in declines. Not every well reflects that because it is a combination of how much are you pumping, typically how much are you pumping is one of the primary ones. But in general, we've seen our well level declines decrease, and we've also seen recovery in some of our wells. One of the things we're going to be working on is trying to get a real picture for looking at this data and trying to get a better understanding of what's happening with our aquifer. One of the things that's hard is we're not the only ones pumping from this aquifer. There's nearly 300 private wells in our service area that are permitted to pump up to 35 gallons a minute. We have the Oro Valley Country Club, which irrigates with their 18 holes with potable water. And we're also influenced by things that happen outside of our service area. Tucson Water's pumping community. Who's in Catalina? Is that
Tucson Water?
But also, isn't there a private company in Catalina? I want to say Goodman's, right? I think it's Goodman's.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Believe it or not, even though you say Catalina. But all of the, even though it's outside of our service area, we're pumping from the same aquifer, all has an effect. So, looking at this data, for example, in 2020, we had 5 wells that showed recovery. In 2015, I had 5 wells that showed recovery. In 2021, I had 3 wells that showed recovery, but, the drawdowns are less, but we still have drawdowns. One of my overreaching goals here is I dream of a day where I can show every row in that column as blue. To me, that's true groundwater sustainability. But, Oro Valley, I think we should take the lead on making that happen, but we're also going to need cooperation from the other users of the aquifer in our area. And this won't happen until we bring in these additional supplies. Now, fortunately, with NWRDS, you know, even though within our area just there may be some wells, you know, we do have parts of our service area that in my mind, it's almost impossible to get other sources of supply to them. I think, what do you think, David, what you know, like in the northeast portion of our service area, is it part of the CAP water up there?
Yeah,
that eastern portion.
Yeah, you did a good job of explaining the CAPs coming up from the south and on the east side, and then bringing Nords in on the west, up north, and then dropping down in there.
Yeah.
I painted a really good picture of how it's from.
Yeah. But it was, fortunately, the way ADWR, the Arizona Department of Water Resources, looks at this is they want to see, they look at an average decline over a certain number of years, and we're below that, which the awkwardly below sounds bad, but we're below the limit, so that's a good thing for us. I apologize, I don't think this presents very well. I'm going to work on this so it's friendlier next time, so thanks for putting up with me. I don't think I hit the mark on this, but what I want to say, we still have declines. We showed recovery in fewer wells this year than we did last year. The why question, we had a great monsoon, but I'll tell you what, it's been my experience that the monsoon rains, while it helps, I think it helps mostly, not so much in aquifer recharge, I think it helps mostly in less consumption. It seems like the hydrology that really matters is how much snow we get on that mountain. And what happens is that snow melts and it just slowly titrates in the aquifer instead of just coming down and zipping through. It's fun to watch. We have some fresh snow on those mountains. When it starts melting, go to Catalina State Park, go across the wash, roll up your pants. When you cross at the trailhead there, maybe it's 8 inches, 12 inches deep. As you start walking to the west, you get to CDO Wash, or you get to the Oracle Road Bridge that's 6 inches deep. You get to La Cunada, that's 3 inches deep. You get to La Cholla, and you see it just magically going in the ground. I think that's the hydrology that really counts. So even though you can think, hey, man, we had this great summer, I mean, literally like the wettest summer, like the summers of old that I remember growing up here, I don't think I really saw a real big benefit to that. But what I see a benefit is, like in 2018, we got a lot of snow. I think we had recovery in, I think, like six of our wells. I think that's the hydrology that matters. Any discussion on this? I apologize if this doesn't communicate well. I don't think it does, but this, the moral of the story is we still have declines. The declines have declined, but we have less recovery than we did last year. Any discussion on that? Yeah, well, thank you. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Getting back on track here, item number 7, once again, Peter.
Yeah.
discussion of possible action regarding a water utility commission field trip in April.
So, we sent out some dates, and I really want to try to make this trip work for everybody. But first, let me say this, because maybe it changes some of this. So, I think Commissioner Amilke and Commissioner McMillan, this year I plan on a tour of Tucson Water's recharge and recovery facility, which is where we also send water and recover it. You've been on this tour, so I just want you to be aware it is that same tour again. But I wanted to revisit that tour because I don't think Commissioner Hitt or Olson or our council liaison has seen that infrastructure. I think it would be very beneficial that they did. But just want to let you know that is the plan for the field trip. But just wanted, I wanted to look at calendars. I'm going to need help with this. It seemed like, did these dates change? Did anybody's dates change? It's like this perfect storm where I can't get everybody at the same time. And let me just see. Councilmember Bowen was the most flexible. His only no was April 27th. Chair Merrick and Commissioner McMillan, you're killing me. Like, what are you guys doing in April? You like out of the country?
Well, let me be the first to say that I have been on the tour before, so don't let my lack of availability affect your decision. I don't need to go.
Okay. Well, we appreciate that. Does the 18th? We'll see. Mr. McMillan, can he make it on the 18th and the 20th? I don't know. What's any recommendation on the best way to do this? Is the best way to send another email or try and hash it out now?
Probably an email for me. I don't have my work calendar.
Okay.
Handy.
So let me just do this so I don't take too much of time. I'll get with Tucson Water and just get a whole laundry list of what the dates are. Let me ask you this. Do you have any strong... Let's just say I can get everybody together except you and Commissioner Ford. I mean, is that correct? Is that...
If I don't be the impediment, I would be happy to skip. Okay. However, if it works,
I'll go. To go. Okay. And I'd like you to go there, both of you. Okay. I think I'll be inefficient trying to do it here, so I'll get another staff. Okay, so look for that. It would be similar to what we've done in the past, where we'd be here at Town Hall, go on a field trip, come back. We are required, since it is a... special session, is it considered study session? We'll have lunch, and then we'll have to group and just talk about what we saw, and then we can break. I envision, maybe in the past we've been done. We started at 8:30. What did I have on there? Yeah, I'm going to have to make it up, right? Because I already thought about it. Oh, well, here, let's teach you something while we're at it. I forgot I did this slide. So did it a week ago. Commission field trip, tourist city, Tucson, recharge recovery facility. Oral Valley, we deliver 3,500 a year of CAP water to, and the CASAR, Tucson Water, CASAR, and SASAR facilities are considered USFs, that's underground storage facilities. And we recover most of the water we deliver to Tucson Water's facility within the year that it's delivered there. So USF is an underground storage facility, and it's one way of saving water for future use. Another way is utilizing the groundwater savings facility, the GSF. And specific rules apply to utilizing both USFs and GSFs. So what's the difference? So a groundwater savings facility, we did a tour of one of these last year, is Kai Farms. It's indirect recharge, or we consider it in lieu recharge. So for example, in a groundwater savings facility, agriculture, in the case of Kai Farms, the CAP canals, we saw goes right through the middle of their farm. They have a pump on a bridge over the canal. They pump water right out of the canal for irrigation purposes, our water. And in lieu of that, we get a portion of their groundwater if we ever need it. So instead of them pumping groundwater for agricultural uses, they use a portion of our CAP water and we get their groundwater in return. And how would we get that groundwater? Well, fortunately, like I said, the CAP canal goes right through the middle of their farm. They have groundwater wells that are equipped. They're out of service, but it doesn't take much to rehabilitate to get those in service. They would pump the groundwater in the canal, and we would take delivery of it at CASAR, SAFSAR, Lower Santa Cruz, any number of USFs, underground storage facilities, for recharge and recovery purposes. So that's how we would recover GSF water. One of the benefits of GSF, there's no evaporation loss, but you still have a 5% cut to the aquifer. So the way the rules work in underground storage facilities here, like direct recharge, this is where we take our CAP water, we put it in a recharge facility, it percolates down to the aquifer. If you pump it out that same year you put it in, you don't have to pay this 5% cut to the aquifer. If you leave it there over a year, say you store, 100 acre feet there, if you go past that 1 year mark, you only get to recover, well, at most 95 acre feet, because there's also an evaporation loss you pay for. So we like, insofar as practical, to utilize GSFs because we don't have to pay for the evaporation loss. But in either case, you pay for a 5% types of the aquifer that you get as tour is to look at Tucson Water's facilities, which is the USS, CAP water recharge facilities and recovery. So where would we be going? Where would we be? Oh, so we are, we're way over here, and this is a mile-wide road here, and here's Sandario Road. Here's Sandario. Sandario, mile-wide. Three or four years ago, Tucson Water took us to Savsar. This is Cavsar, Central Aber Valley Storage and Recovery Project, and this is Savsar, Southern Aber Valley Storage and Recovery Project. So we're likely to be coming down Sandario Road to the Savsar facilities, looking at the recharge. This is where they recharge. They have recovery wells. The recovery wells pump to a four-bay reservoir booster station that delivers water into the Tucson Water Service Area. So more than likely, we'll be going to the Savsar area, but it could be possible they would tour us at Cavsar. They'll probably send us to whatever facility is most active at the time, which I think they'd be in alignment with each other. Here again, we'll try and get you some more dates, see if we can capture everyone. 8:15, report to Town Hall. Like to be wheels up by 8:30. Probably takes about 45 minutes to reach the Tucson Water facilities. Tour for, an hour and 15, 75 minutes, 90 minutes, pretty much get a good overview of the facility. Head back in, we'll have lunch at the Overlook, similar to what we did last year. And then we'll come back here to Town Hall, have a study session. We should be done by 1 o'clock. Pretty fun trip. I think those have done it past, so a good time. And anyways, I'll tell you what I think to me. I show you, slides like this all the time, but I don't think you really get an appreciation of that until you see it and you look at the infrastructure. Like, if you look at what it takes to do what we do, I think it's a miracle. I mean, it's amazing. It's just a real testament to what we can do when we put our minds to it. I think it's impressive. But I think Councilwoman Bowen, I think you'd be really impressed to appreciate seeing it. And so we'll get something to you.
Yeah, Peter, that's essentially the same process you'll be using in the Northwest Recharge and Recovery.
Yeah,
a different scale, but it's the same.
Yeah,
same concept.
I think Tucson Water CUP allocation is 100 and something, whatever.
140, somewhere 140, in
that. 140,000 acre feet a year, versus 10,305. But here again, Tucson Water's 10 times, we have 21,000 connections. They have over 250,000, so they're like 11 times larger than us. Yeah, so it's about the same scale. Any questions on that? Well, we'll get you some dates. We'll do our best to capture everybody. Thank you.
All right. Perfect. Thank you. And then moving on to item number 8, Town Council Meeting Communications, Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Commissioner Hitt. There hasn't been too much going on in the council meetings. We only had one agenda item at our last council meeting, and that was the update of a liquor license for the Push Ridge Golf Course. But I would like to tell everyone that we're coming into a very important part of the year, which is the budget season, April through the end of June. And there's been reporting of things, bad news, that I think everyone would know about. There's a couple of things that are going up astronomically in price, and we all know about this, gasoline and construction. But I'd also like to report to you that there's good news on the revenue side. On our revenue side, retail sales tax, way up. Bed tax, way up. Licenses and permits, way up. So it's difficult to tell. You can't resolve it unless you report all of it together. But to me, it looks like our finances remain in good shape. We'll have the extra revenue to cover the extra costs that we anticipate. But stay tuned. We resolve all this in the budget meetings, and they're coming up in the next few months. So that's my report to the Water Commission. Very good job, and keep it going, you guys.
All right, thank you. Any questions, Councilman?
I have one comment.
Sure.
As part of the budget process, I think there'll be a study session on the various department budgets.
Absolutely.
Could you let us know when the one is scheduled for your budget?
Sure.
They're interesting to listen to.
All right. Any other questions? All right, item number 9, Subcommittee Commissioner Reports. Finance.
I'm the only person here, and no, we didn't do anything.
Nope. All right. Thank you. And water resources, conservation, we didn't do anything as well. So, and no meeting scheduled that I'm aware of.
You know what, now that I think about it, our main meeting, I think we have a vacancy to fill in with Commissioner Hurt designing, which person? He was on the idea. I think we have a subcommittee position to fill.
He wasn't on finance.
Yeah, I think he was on.
He was not on finance, so he must have been on water.
I think he was on resources.
Well, cool. I just remember about that. Thank you.
All right, perfect. Number 10, director's report. Once again, Peter.
Okay. It's April 6th, town council regular session, council chamber, 6 p.m. Same thing, April 20th, and then we'll figure out, hopefully sometime in April, our water utility commission field trip in lieu of our regular scheduled meeting. And May 9th will be our next water utility commission meeting here in the conference room at 5 p.m. Here again, I track, get an idea of what's going on with the snowpack in the upper basin states, how it compares to previous years. They got rid of my old graph that I used to use. This was the closest one I could find. So what it is this green line represents the median snowpack in the upper basin states, and we like to be above that line, but I'll take on it or above it. The years went by so fast. I think it was last year, the year before, we had this visible year, which is this red line here. But here we are with a black line. You know, we got off to a slow start. We had some, particularly I noticed is when we have that those winter type rains here, upper basin states is getting a bunch of snow, it seems like. And now we're kind of following the trend line. So, you know, we'll see how it goes if we get any more winter activity in the upper basin states. We already know we're in a tier one shortage. We'd like to see as much snowpack as possible to keep us out of a tier two shortage. Here you're looking at the plan view. Basically, this is kind of the snow or the watershed area of what provides the water for the Colorado River, and more importantly, determines the water surface elevation of Lake Mead. So, we like to see, green's okay. We like to see green, cyan, blue. We don't like yellow, orange, or red. So, it's looking about average to me so far. I kind of provided this inset map because I always provided this one in the past, and I don't know about you, I looked at it, I'm like, okay, Denver, where in the heck am I? So, here's Arizona, the Four Corner States, and you kind of see that colored portion is, that's really the watershed that provides the water for the Colorado River. So keep our fingers crossed we get some additional winter hydrology. Active hydrology in these upper basin states, and we can see a good runoff. Keep those reservoirs from dropping any further, both Powell and Lake Mead. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Any other questions for Peter? All right, hearing none, we'll move back to call to the audience. Any speaker cards?
No.
All right, thank you. Future agenda items? Any requests for topics, discussions, future agendas? All right, hearing none, we'll get to the final and most important item on the agenda. Adjournment. Can I get a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All right, we got a second. Do we roll call, I guess? You want to? Or? Okay.
Commissioner Forrest?
Yes.
Commissioner McMillan?
Yes.
Commissioner Milkey?
Yes.
Commissioner Olson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Kitt?
Yes.
Thank you.
You're adjourned. Thank you.
Everybody.